My name's Adam Scarborough. I'm a long-term civil liberties campaigner, a supporter of open rights, member of Liberty, member of Campaign Against Censorship, Big Brother Watch, all of them. I live near Harlow in Essex, West Essex, hilly West Essex. I've lived here for just over 10 years now. Like it very much. I'm a former soldier. I am also a mental health officer. I've been working as a nurse for over 35 years, which I still do. And I'm interested in not just environmental, physical and psychological health, but societal health. We have to think about society as a whole and maintaining mental health of people. And I don't think we can do that when we have the sort of dystopian tape, which is closing down liberty after liberty day by day.
Well, I mean, I've seen some statistics from the London Ambulance Brigade that say that they have been to double this year the number of attempted suicides. The actual number of suicides as well has been reported as doubled. Can you just say what you think is causing that?
Well, we all know, I mean, I know when I did my psychiatric course that isolation is one of the biggest causes of mental illness. There's a, if you anyone's read Desmond Morris, zoologist Desmond Morris, Naked Ape, you'll find out there's a thing called anti-explorational behaviour. As human beings, we are social animals. We need company. We're creatures of habit. And when that social side of us is taken away, it has an adverse effect on our behavior. And may I say that the term social distancing is just one big oxymoron, because there is nothing social about distancing. It's the opposite to being social. And in itself, it's quite a worrying concept to say social distancing. It's almost bringing forward a notion paradoxically that being distant is social. So the term in itself is quite cruel, I think.
Have you noticed anything in your own work that indicates that people have been being affected badly by these lockdowns and things?
Indeed, both amongst staff, prisoners and patients, seeing a very adverse effect on their behaviour, an isolationist agenda. For example, prisoners being prevented, visitors, I won't say too much about that. And also, you know, anyone with any mental illness, a structured day, whether it's depression or whether it's a psychotic illness, a structured day is very, very important to their routine. It's a lifeline. And if that structure is taken away, as it is at the moment, particularly, may I say, over Christmas, where I knew someone that worked in National Savings in Glasgow, they get, for example, more calls on Christmas Day than any other day of the year. And that, I think, this year will be quadrupled. And yes, you're quite right in saying that the suicides are going through the roof. There's going to be a lot of coroner's cases in 2021, I feel. And it's not going to get better. War's going to come to an end at some stage, and you're going to go home and you're going to get some freedom. But what we have at the moment is we're almost under siege by our own government.
Have you been along to any of these demonstrations?
I've been along to, I see it as a duty, and I've been along to virtually everyone since it started, since Piers's first arrest in Hyde Park. And it's impossible, to be quite honest, to not conclude that the police aren't politically motivated, to give the impression, as you rightly just said, that they're dealing with a violent bunch of people. Tony, nothing could be further from the truth. There's professionals, there's doctors. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day that a doctor, a qualified doctor, this German doctor, was thrown into the back of a meat wagon for the terrible crime of just speaking. I mean, something's wrong when that happens to a society. And I feel, you know, we either sit back and you take this, or you peacefully demonstrate. There was no aggression from the demonstrators at all. Had the police have not been there, in quite honestly, you do not need the police there. The police are the antagonists. If they weren't there, there would be no trouble at all. It'd be like a peaceful picnic in the park. All the trouble is, look, on Wednesday, if you speak to David Curtin, mayoral London Assembly member, he will tell you the same thing. The police were the antagonist, and they're there purely to cause trouble. It's so sad, because they're arresting people. They're giving people criminal records now, going to ruin people's lives. And this malpractice has to stop, which is why I've written to my MPs about it before something serious happens.
OK, so what have you said to your MP?
Well, I basically did a version of the letter that you read, basically saying that the health and safety factors, that, you know, the police demand risk assessments, and then in one big contradiction, they start beating the hell out of people for no good reason. It's one big contradiction, yet they at the same time they demand risk assessments. I mean, that's a very audacious thing to do. And I think, you know, along those lines, that in a democratic society, myself and other soldiers, we all fought for a free society. The right to demonstrate is the hallmark of a free society. If you take that freedom away, if you look at the amount of laws that are going through, the amount of acts that all may I say under a Conservative government, whether it's the Digital Economies Bill, whether it's the Investigatory Powers Act, whether it's the Online Harms Act that's going through, and more frighteningly, this Covert Criminal Intelligence Act, which is going through at the moment, which will basically give the police the right to torture with impunity. And then there's Priti Patel's other one, which is called, ironically named, Protection of the Public Bill. So in her mind, in that woman's mind, God knows what's going on in there, taking away freedoms, taking away the right to demonstrate, is protecting the public. I mean, try and get your head around that one. So these oppressive laws, I think, have to be challenged, or the dystopian state won't take place overnight. If it was to take place overnight, it would be all too obvious what happens. So they have to do it in a sort of tapering, step-by-step fashion, where we lose freedom by freedom, and then they sort of test the public to see how gullible they are, and then we'll come. And every law that they make, every repressive law that they make, is a precursor for another retrogressive law to come in. It's not going to stop until we're left doing the Times crossword puzzle or watching old Mother Riley movies on TV.
Yeah. So I know in your letter you say something about you believe that there are going to be more demonstrations to come.
Well, I think because, you know, the Prime Minister's not given any indication as when this is going to end. I mean, people now, you know, back in April when it started, they were considering this, it would be over in a few weeks. Now we're coming towards the end of the year. It's now pushing a year since we've had this, since last, was it April, March, when it first lockdown happened. And I think inevitably, especially now, people are losing their jobs. I mean, I was walking down the Strand the other day in central London. Every business, including some of the oldest shops in England, are now closed down in one of the richest streets in London, near the, just adjacent to the Savoy Hotel. So when you see people losing things like that, I think the amount of resistance is going to increase. I can't see any other way. So yes, I think
you also said. Yeah. I mean, you also said something about you believe that the police are now using military tactics. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that, from what I've seen of the TSG, they're basically like a military wing of the state. When they're attacking, their hands on each shoulders, they make a sort of, I don't know, you could describe it as a sort of monkey noise that they make before they charge into the crowd. And then it's what I've seen, it was almost like with all the zeal of military attack on innocent, defenseless people, totally disproportionate to what was going on. And I found it like every other one, because the idea that a policeman is like some sort of Dixon and Doc Green fantasy figure that will cuff you on the shoulder and tell you to go home, they were anything but. And they were big guys, big scary men to the average woman or man, who would either put you into the fight or flight syndrome, which either means you stand your ground or you run away. And by running away, they're also using snatch squads as well, which is very, 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 how can I say, like nonchalantly walking up to you and then making a quick grab for you. This is a very cruel way of grabbing anyone in the vicinity. I've seen that quite a lot. And someone's going to get seriously hurt. I mean, I've seen people knocked unconscious. I've seen people with cranial wounds, very, very bloody. And when you see that, that's when the police start to worry a bit. Because, you know, they like the George Floyd thing in America, I counted the minutes he was unconscious for George Floyd. And they're so used to assaulting people, Tony, that they don't realise that they too can go to coroner's court, and they are responsible for their actions. It's not just about following orders. There is a conscience clause. They are responsible for their own actions.
No, I know you're also quite concerned that about various codes not being adhered to, and you are yourself as a nurse actually surely quite. You know those codes back to front. We've already heard a bit about the Nuremberg Code, the idea that you're not allowed to experiment on people, which it seems quite clearly they are doing now, particularly on the elderly in care homes with this new, almost untested vaccine. But what do you make of the actual codes of ethics for nursing?
The code of ethics for nursing, I mean, the ones we abide by, any mental health officer, you cannot give, for example, an injection to someone who's got capacity. We have definitions of mental health act. We have section one, which is definition of mental disorder. We have section two, which is admission for assessment. And we have which is assessment order. And we also have the treatment orders, such as section three of the Mental Health Act, where someone without capacity can be given an injection against their will. But may I add that this cannot be done without the section being enforced by two doctors and an approved social worker. That is very, very rigid. The criteria is quite rigid for that. But when we're talking about a compulsory vaccine, to make that comparison, there's no comparison really, because you're talking about people that have got capacity, and if they won't consent, they won't consent. It's as simple as that. So the Mental Capacity Act specifically states that people without capacity can be subject to treatment orders. They can't without it.
What about, as a former military man yourself, seeing these kind of military style tactics being used by the police? What advice have you got for people that do want to continue peacefully demonstrating?
My advice is obviously be safe. Don't break the law if you can. If the government, ridiculously in my opinion, says stay in groups of three or six, try to do that. Although sometimes if the police are running at you, it's very, very difficult to do that. But my advice as well is to keep your distance from police, because you just don't know what they're going to do. They cannot be trusted. Even the solicitor will tell you not to talk to the police. It's sad it has to be that way, because I say they are public servants. But my advice to people is to stay safe and watch the police at all times. The best protection, as any solicitor will tell you, is to use your camera, photograph. That can also be prima facie evidence in court to prove police wrongdoing. The police don't like cameras, which is all the more reason to do them. Not to the point, may I add, of harassing a police officer, but the point of protecting yourself so that it can be used in court. And in a true democracy, a government should be defending the right to demonstrate, and defending the right to be critical, because nothing, in my opinion, is beyond criticism.
I suppose is the $64,000 question. Why do you think the Boris Johnson government's doing this?
Why do I think we're doing this? There's a number of theories. I know there's a classical theories, but then there's also, the theory of, or should I say, theory, quote, fact of the Great Reset, Mr. von Schwab, or whatever his name is, which also, I believe, Prince Charles, they're talking about. Mr. Schwab said we have to be happy with nothing, and yet, strange enough, one of his supporters is Prince Charles. Try and work that one out. Happy with nothing, That's a theory I'm coming on more to believe, because Mr. von Schwab is there. And if there's no logic in it, if I listen to people like eminent virologists like Dr. John Lee and Professor Gupta, who everything I learned in biology about viruses peak and they plummet. For example, a virus going through that mask is equivalent to a mouse running through Marble Arch. Viruses are submicroscopic particles that travel on the wind. There's trillions of them carrying in the air as I'm now speaking. If all this is being avoided, and this lockdowns go on in perpetually, then people are going to look, I think, for an ulterior motive. Anyone that reads between the lines, watches the UK column, which is what they're very good at, will go and look for an ulterior motive. If this isn't happening for any rational reason, then it must be happening for another reason. And that's what's scary about it. That's the unknown quantity that we're looking at. And will people give in to whatever it is, or I think the jury's out on that one at the moment, because when people are afraid, you can do anything with them. There'll always be certain personality types that will fight back and assert their rights, and there'll be others that will go along with the state, whatever they do.
And if people have got friends, relatives that have mental health problems, is there any advice you can give them to help them through this?
I think that particularly over the Christmas period, it's anyone you're fond of, it's very important to keep in touch with them, even if it's by a telephone, by an email, on Facebook, or even pop around to see them with their consent. I think that's a very good thing, because I think this Christmas is going to be unlike any other. And again, it's being pushed forward as the new norm. If you look at it this way, there's nothing normal about adversity. Adversity is the antithesis of normality, and I think people must get rid of the idea there is only one norm, and that is the norm that we had before. And to get back to anyone with suicidal tendencies, it's good. A lot of people that commit suicide won't give you any indicators at all. They will just do it. So I think it's good to keep an eye on their behaviour, particularly if they're a lonely person, if they're acting very quietly, walking strange in a world of their own, keep an eye on them. I think we've all got a moral duty to do that, particularly to the elderly when we're looking at, and this is another, in my opinion, a cruel aspect to all this, that my own mother died in April and I wasn't allowed to see her before she died. I wasn't even allowed to go there. If anyone's in care homes, I think this is one of the cruelest aspects of all this. You should, even if it's going looking through a window and touching them through, that's one thing. It's ridiculous, I know. But I think maintaining social contact with someone, even if it's with the lifeline of a telephone, is very, very important. This is what we do as nurses. For example, community psychiatric nurses will visit clientele regularly to make sure they're taking their right medication, and also doing regular reports on them, because we are responsible. At the end of the day, I'm responsible for my own. I can end up in coroner's court if something goes wrong. And I think we all have that moral duty to relatives and loved ones outside work.
Now, it says finish on something positive, because I understand we've just had an announcement about this whole kind of vaccine passport thing. Now, they were talking about this back in March. Bill Gates wanted to do it so that people will get a special passport once they've had the vaccine. They're allowed to return to normal.
Mm. Yeah, well, we just heard that Nadeem Zahawi, they've gone back, although Johnson was adamant earlier this year that we're all going to have this. And now the government has retracted that, saying that for the time being, at least, there's not going to be any COVID passport. And I think signing petitions do matter, because everyone that signed the petition against, I think over 300,000 people signed that petition against compulsory COVID passports. That did make a difference, because every one of those signatures is counted by MPs. And if they realised, like Sir Desmond Swain says, that they're becoming unpopular with their constituents, they're soon going to change their mind. Writing letters and petitions are very, very important.
Well, I hate to be so cynical, but they might only change their mind in 4 years' time.
Well, this is again, you see, the reason I think one of the most precious things that the British took to America, the English people, was the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, the Freedom of Expression Amendment. I think we should all have some sort of, every democracy should have a freedom of expression and a freedom from liability to the government clause. I think every democracy should have it. And that one should be deciding whether what we do with our own bodies. If our bodies aren't our own, then we don't really live in a free society. And I think free speech needs to be protected by law, and our own bodies need to be our property. Like, for example, before, when you died, you had to give consent for to give your body to scientific research. Now it's the other way around. They will use your body without your consent unless you do sign a clause saying you don't want it. So again, I think that's not exactly ethical. If we're going to be ethical, you should have the right over what's done with your body and not the state. We're not answering the state. My body is my temple. My body is mine. It's not there for the expendability for politicians, many of whom we know have a vested interest in the drug companies to profiteer from.
Have you got any particular places you think people can go to get some decent information on what's going on?
one, obviously, UK column, although they're very, very deep and some the research is brilliant, but it's also very, very complex. I would recommend Lockdown Skeptics is a good one. I would also recommend listening to any video by Dr. John Lee, who is a lovely guy. He's not one of these highfalutin doctors. He's a virologist who will speak in language that we understand. I would also recommend possibly reading one or two articles in the Spectator magazine. Anything that keeps you sane, and sometimes it's good to have a little bit of a diversion from the incredible mass audiovisual bombardment we've got on a daily basis of COVID-19 propaganda, is to do something else, mate. Even if it's doing a jigsaw puzzle, playing the piano, doing a hobby, anything that takes your mind off it will be at least a temporary diversion, because it can become very, very overwhelming to the point where that in itself, it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It can make you ill. But Dr. John Lee is very, very good, because it shows that there is a voice of sanity out there, and Dr. Lee will tell the truth. You know, he's one of those that puts his head above the parapet. He's a retired virologist, and he speaks the truth. And he's one, in my opinion, one of the most honest doctors there are, who says it as it is. Apart from that, there's a number of things that you can do to keep yourself sane. It's not easy when you're against the state, because the state has incredible taxpayer resources to do what it wants with our money. And it's not an easy thing. So I don't think we should go away thinking that it is going to be an easy thing. I decided to write the letter because, I want to avoid a fatality. And, you know, just to highlight what I've said tonight, police are being totally disproportionate and violent. And whatever one thinks about the vaccine, people are entitled to protest without fear of police bashing heads in. This is something which affects us all. There's no... there's only one cause now. You know, I see people now on demos. It's becoming like one big family, Tony. People from the right, people from the left, Marxists going with former capitalists. We've all got the same cause, civil liberties, and that is quite refreshing. But for mental health, we have to consider all factors, as I say, physical, psychological, and very importantly, sociological health. And you can't do that if you're living in constant paranoia about what the state's going to do next with brutal policing. It's the antithesis of societal health. And from the word go, this has all been about single-minded state vendetta to intimidate and arrest organisers of the events. The police have been going around openly trying to find out, even with Robin Tilbrook, who the organisers are. And again, this is not the sign of a healthy society, because it's, again, military techniques. If you can get the officers, you can frighten everyone else into submission. It's a very cruel narrative. And I didn't think, quite honestly, I'd lived through a time when I saw doctors being arrested and thrown into police meat wagons for the terrible crime of speaking. I find that
the crime is giving a second opinion.
Giving a second opinion. I mean, that is, you know, in psychiatry and psychology, you know, it has been said that they're not exact sciences. You know, there's a classical theories about schizophrenia. There's the idea from psychiatrists, alternative psychiatrists like Ronald Lang, that schizophrenia comes from a result of living life under intolerable circumstances. So I think we have to have an open mind. But if someone says that you can't ask a question like a doctor, then we are entering dystopia, and serious questions need to be asked about the government's methods of operation.
Adam Scarborough, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure.